You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
On today's show, Ethan Westerman in studio as we talk about Arkansas softball moving on to the Fayetteville Super Regional this weekend against Ole Miss. Boogie Fland is also transferred to Florida. We'll react to that. Arkansas has a national championship golfer. They have the SEC Baseball Player of the Year. A lot to get to on today's show, but first a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
There are moments for each program when you can look back on it at some point in time and say that was maybe a turning point for the program. You think about Arkansas baseball. Everybody points to Brady Toups and his Grand Slam home run to beat Wichita State in 2004 at a regional as a moment that really just it spurned the baseball program on to much bigger and better things. And, Ethan, I think with softball, we'll see how this weekend goes against Ole Miss. But if they make it to Oklahoma City, I think we're going to look back at the comeback that they had against Oklahoma State last Saturday when they're down three going into the seventh inning. They score three. They win it in eight. I think you could potentially look back at that moment as that was a big turning point slash hurdle that the softball team cleared because it didn't look real promising for them. And if they lose that game, I don't know that they get out of the Fayetteville Regional for the third year in a row. But as Courtney Dyfel said, after the game, it's a different team, it's a different year, and obviously it was a different outcome.
Yeah, and it felt like in the moment, I mean, they were down 5-1 entering the sixth, and it just felt like they were fighting their old demons from the past, to be honest. Like, nothing was really going their way. It's not like they had played poorly. They just had made a few mistakes that let the game become, you know, a little bit of a sizable lead for Oklahoma State. But something changed, and they figured it out. This is something that it's not, like, foreign to anybody knowing this with how these regionals are set up. But that game on Saturday, the first winner's bracket game, is almost, like, I mean, it's by far the most important game of the whole regional because it's so hard to rebound from losing that because it takes, number one, an emotional toll on you. I think that you got to turn around and play that night again with your season on the line. And then if you come out of that, you got to turn around the next day and beat the team who beat you the day before twice. So it's a lot to overcome, and I think that you kind of saw that it was a sucker punch that I think Arkansas delivered to them to where they couldn't really come back the next day and have what it took to beat Arkansas. It was definitely the type of game that I think you look back on and you say that was a character game because they don't win that game at all earlier this year.
I come at this from a baseball standpoint, obviously, because I cover baseball so much, but baseball and softball, their postseasons are set up the same. And that 1-0 game that you're talking about, where you've both won your opening game of the regional and you're playing in the winner's bracket, it is the most stressful game of the entire postseason. Mm-hmm. The entire postseason. It doesn't matter if it's game three of the super regional. It doesn't matter if, or maybe I shouldn't say stressful, it's the most pivotal game, which I think puts a lot of stress on you. But anyway, doesn't matter if it's game three of the super regional, doesn't matter if it's game three of the national championship series. There's not a more pivotal point in the postseason than that 1-0 game, because if you fall into the loser's bracket, like, you know, the chances of you coming out of that are real slim. I think it's less than 20% of teams all time have come out of the loser's bracket to advance past the regional. Regional format is different than a super regional format where it's a best of three series. And then once you get to the World Series, you've got a little bit more time of rest in between games, mm-hmm. even though it reverts to that regional type format for the first week. So, you could feel, I thought you could feel the urgency from both teams to win that game because they both knew what was staring them in the face if they didn't.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, I mean, it's once you get to super regional round, it's, if you lose your first game, it's nothing you haven't experienced that season. Like, you know how a series works. The regional format is truly your first time to get in that situation, and you just never know how a team's going to react whenever it's their first time with that type of pressure. And I just think that you could certainly tell, like the more that Arkansas started to get runners on base in that seventh inning, you could feel the pressure on Oklahoma State. At least I thought so. Like, I know, like, in that instance, you'd almost think, like, the pressure should be all on Arkansas to have to come through and deliver, but I think that it just started piling up on Oklahoma State where she was trying to make, like, the perfect pitch or something and just, I mean, gave Arkansas stuff to hit. It was the type of game that, yeah, you definitely look back on and you say, if that goes a different way, then I'm not sure Arkansas comes out of the regional alive.
Two moments this year when I've been out of bomb stand out to me about when other games were going on. Back in March, Arkansas was playing St. John's in the NCAA basketball tournament on the day that the baseball team was playing, I think, game two against South Carolina. And everybody is watching this. I mean, like, you could tell there were points in the baseball game where during a normal course of a baseball game, it gets the crowd riled up and nobody's reacting because everybody's sitting there watching their phones or the people up in the suites are gathered around the TVs and they're all watching Arkansas St. John's play. And then when it becomes apparent that Arkansas is going to beat St. John's, the baseball stadium goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other day, when the softball game was occurring, it wasn't quite to that level. People weren't – I don't think people were paying probably as close attention to the softball game as they were to basketball. And some of that's just the nature of the two sports. One, you kind of have to focus in on a little bit more. The other, you know, it's like baseball. You can kind of look away for 10, 15 seconds and look back down. But when the softball team won that game against Oklahoma State, it was another one of those situations where if you were in the stadium, you heard it, all of a sudden kind of this like cheer starts sweeping across the stadium, and it's because everybody was paying attention, or a lot of people were paying attention to what was going on with softball. So it was just kind of two really neat moments at the baseball stadium. Everybody, I say everybody, like we were in the press box, and probably not mine because I had – one right here and one right here, but like there were so many laptops on with the softball game on and everybody's watching it, and it was just kind of a neat moment.
I've been really impressed the past two weekends that there's been home softball. There's also been home baseball at like the exact same time, pretty much. I say the exact same time. There was a little bit of stagger, I think, this weekend, but most people kind of, I think, sold on one to go to one or the other, and I mean, it was full there. I think it's cool that you can have a full stadium both places. I'm interested to see this weekend, now that baseball will be in Hoover, if they can draw even bigger crowd, because it's a lot of the same people who like to go to both. I mean, I see a lot of the same people at both whenever I watch the baseball broadcast, but either way, it's cool that they've been able to, you know, for two consecutive weekends, have both packed.
I suspect there will be record crowds at Bogle this weekend when they play Ole Miss. 7 o'clock on Friday is going to be the first game. And talking about baseball, assuming Hoover and the schedule stays on track, Arkansas baseball would play on Friday at 3 o'clock. So probably would not be any interference between those two games on Friday. I know the weather up here doesn't look too great this weekend. You know, I'm sure it's probably going to be the same way in Birmingham. I don't know yet. I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to the forecast that far out in Birmingham. Saturday night, 8 o'clock, would be the first pitch for Arkansas softball at Bogle Park. Courtney Dyfel spoke after the Razorbacks beat Oklahoma State 12-0 on Sunday night. This was a marathon, by the way. I mean, the storms came through. The game was supposed to start at 3. Didn't start till 7:15. You know, ended fairly late, and had Arkansas lost that game, I think they would have turned around and played another one well into the morning. But this is what Courtney Dyfel had to say about the importance of beating Oklahoma State in game two, how it played a factor in game three, and then obviously, well, you'll hear it. This is what Courtney Dyfel had to say.
Well, I think it's huge. I think it's huge. I think yesterday's game was a huge turning point for us. I think that it was a moment where we had to dig deep. We had to find a way. We had to keep fighting. We had to be relentless. We had to do all of those things that we've showed throughout the year. In a moment where you could feel like your back was against the wall, you could feel like it wasn't going your way. And them finding a way to win that game, it's like we turned the page and it was like, okay, let's go. And I'm so proud of them. I think we've won in different ways throughout the entire year. So this this weekend's been like a small snapshot of what we've done over the entire year. But it was big for this team. It's big for this team. And I know everyone's doing their job, but you have this narrative from your guys' side of like, oh, are they going to do it? Are they going to do it? Remember last year? And this team is different. This team isn't last year's team. This team isn't 2 years ago. This team's wired different. And they had moved on, and they know they're different. And so just continuing to handle the mentality of the game, handle the emotion of the game, and perform at a high level, I am continuously impressed with them, but I am so impressed with what they did this weekend.
You know, you hear Courtney Dyfel speak. Remember, I just say this. It's easy to see why the players love playing for her. I mean, she's so articulate. She's so, she's got her players' backs. Mm-hmm. And you can see that on the field, and you can just hear it in everything she says. But I thought that was real striking what she said. This is not last year's team. This is not 2 years ago. This is this year's team, and they've got their own story to write. Yeah. And I think that sometimes that gets conflated. It's like, you know, I know we're going to hear with baseball coming up here in the next couple of weeks, well, they lost to TCU. Well, they lost to Kansas State. I'm sure they're going to lose to, you know, whoever is sent here to Fayetteville in 2 weeks. Just because it's happened the last 2 years and happened with two different teams does not mean that it's going to happen with this year's.
Yeah, for sure. And it's crazy. We've mentioned this before, how much baseball and softball have kind of followed the same script in the past few regionals. But what's really
kind of
striking,
spooky, actually, how
it's
how
like the exact same games that they're losing, and like in the regional too. It's like in by the same style. It's weird, but what I find most striking about with the softball team like this, kind of with what's happened with them, because it is a lot of the same players though. But it is a different team, and you sit there and you think about what changed, like what got this team to where they can be better than those in years past. And I think they're very intentional with their recruiting of who they bring in. And I just think they brought in some serious winners who maybe helped pick up the athletes who were on the previous two teams who, I don't know, maybe just build that confidence back up. Because you think about Carly Davison, they added her from Utah. She mm-hmm. went to the Women's College World Series with DJ Gasso, who he's a winner. I just think that they have enough players in the dugout right now that just have that winning culture to them that they were able to kind of build up maybe those players who came out and were quite frankly stunned the past 2 years on their home field because they just didn't expect to lose that early. I think that there's a good mesh right now of just like newness of people on the team mixed with a lot of, I mean, they've been talented. I mean, the junior class that they have right now, that was Courtney Dyfel's, it was like the number one rated freshman class, and now they're grown up. They're so talented, and I just think that they have this mixture of talent with good culture pieces. They just have a really good roster. I mean, there's a reason whenever Arkansas loses to Oklahoma at the SEC tournament, you see Oklahoma fans like identifying that as a team that they thought they would. They're like, that's as good of a team I think that there is in the nation. You were seeing them make comments like that. And if there's any fan base that knows what a good team looks like, I would say it's Oklahoma. So I think that it's a team that, it's crazy. You look at the bracket down there, the top seed on their side of the bracket now that Texas A&M lost. So they have a chance like to do something special. It's just, can they keep it going?
You mentioned Carly Davison. I feel bad for her parents. You know, her little brother is a baseball player for Fayetteville High School. They're going to be playing their state championship game, I believe, at the same time Saturday night.
Oh, boy.
That Arkansas could potentially be clinching a spot in Oklahoma City. How tough is that?
Where's the championship
it's
at?
It's in Conway.
Oh, yeah.
State
so you aren't
games
like,
are in Conway. Even though they're playing Rogers, don't get me off on this. When you've got two Northwest Arkansas teams having to drive 200-something miles to play each other when they could meet up here, you know, it's...
That's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's... talk about coming from a baseball family. My goodness. Her family's all athletes, and she's their best... like Kylie Halverson, who it's crazy they're actually gonna face her team. She's a GA at Ole Miss.
Tell her story real quick.
Yeah,
Davison, her dad.
He's played for the Dodgers, I believe.
Yeah, right. And I believe he still works for them in like some sort of instructional. And then both of her grandfathers, I think, played professional baseball.
Yeah, and she came from the there's out of the travel ball teams. There's the California Bat Busters, and it's just kind of like known as like the. They're like the ones that OU handpicks from. Like that is where OU gets its players, and she played on a team with all of them. she's originally from California. Her family, yeah, like, I mean, duh, they moved here since her brother plays for FHS this year. And there, she's not the only one. This is something that's really telling to me. A lot of these players that they get to sign here, their families move here.
It happens in a lot of sports.
I hear it all the time.
It's like they get here, and it's like, wow, I kind of like that. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, I've seen people come in here, too, where, you know, they might own a franchise, and, like, they don't have that franchise here in Northwest Arkansas. Well, you know what? I'm going to move to Northwest Arkansas. I'm going to keep my businesses over here, but I'm going to move to Northwest Arkansas, and I'm going to open them up there, and I can be closer to my kids.
Yeah, I mean, I see it all the time, but back to the point I was making, that they've had some really good defensive second basemen the past few years, like Kylie Halverson, who she's now a GA at Ole Miss, so she'll be back.
Yeah.
She was really good at second base last year. Christina Foreman the year before. I mean, they've been really talented at second base defensively. I think that Carly Davison is the best defensive second baseman they've had. I mean, she just makes – the balls just don't get past her. It just – it's like if they start rolling towards second base, she's going to field it. That's invaluable. I mean, they're really good defensively in general. They lead the nation in fielding percentage.
I know you'll look into this a little bit more – you'll look into this a little bit more in depth as the week goes along. But Ole Miss beat Arkansas the first week of SEC play 9-1, 9-3, and then Arkansas, I guess, got mad.
Very mad.
And won game three by like 17 runs.
There was a safety squeeze of like 15 in that game.
So what do you think they learn from that series? And I've heard you say this, and I've heard others say it too, that this is just a totally different Arkansas team than they were 2.5 months ago.
Yeah, they just learned how to win, to be honest. I mean, their non-conference schedule, it's not like it was a cakewalk, but they hadn't played like big names yet. They lost to UCLA, got beat pretty bad, and then it was like the next real big test was Ole Miss, and I just think they, quite frankly, got kind of punched in the face, like, to start things off, and I think that that trip to Tennessee when they went and took that series was when they learned how to win over good teams. Like, they were a good team all along. They just had to learn what it takes to beat other good teams, and I think that they weren't ready that Ole Miss weekend. I mean, obviously, if you get beat 9-1 and 9-3, you weren't hitting very well the first two games. And I think that they learned, like, just how to start piecing stuff together offensively a little bit more. I mean, they weren't pitching well either those games. Nothing went well. But I just think that since that moment, this team has kind of gotten this edge about them where even on Saturday, like, it was kind of following the same script, but you just don't count them out, if that makes sense. Like, you just, it's shocking when they lose now. Like, that's just how well they're playing. It surprises you when they lose. And I think that that's just something that they developed since that Ole Miss series. They didn't hit Lopez or Wacheno, their pitchers, very well that weekend. Brady had a big weekend. Pone had a big weekend. I mean, it was just Ole Miss doing exactly what it wanted to.
I told you the other day, this reminds me of whenever Arkansas baseball played Ole Miss in a super regional 6 years ago. Ole Miss came in here, won the series, then they came back in the super regional, and Arkansas won that one and got to Omaha. We'll see if it's the same scenario that plays out when the softball teams get together this weekend again. Friday at 7 o'clock is going to be the first pitch. Saturday at 8 o'clock over Bogle at Bogle Park, weather permitting, obviously. As we've seen the last couple of days here in Northwest Arkansas, the weather has been pretty active, pretty chaotic. When we come back, we're going to talk about Boogie Phelan transferring to Florida. We'll also have thoughts on Vahiva Aloy, his SEC Player of the Year Award. Maria Jose Marin won the NCAA Golf Championship yesterday. Some thoughts on that, too. But first, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. RazorbackSports.com. I want to tell you, too, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. Hope you'll also subscribe to our podcast. You can find it on Apple by searching Whole Hog Sports, or you can find it on our Whole Hog Sports YouTube page. We post a video there each day. We also put that on our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Whole Hog Sports. News coming out this morning, not surprising news, I should say, but that Boogie Fland is going to transfer to Florida. I think this is where a lot of people thought he was going to end up. His agent is Mike Miller, who played for the Gators late 90s, early 2000s on those first teams of Billy Donovan's that really started to turn Florida, I think, into the Florida that we know now. Went there on a visit, I think, here recently, right before the Gators' White House visit for the national championship win. I didn't feel like there was a place for Boogie Fland on this team. I mean, did you? It felt like once he entered the draft and once Arkansas signed Darius Acuff, it just felt like where does Boogie fit in on this team? Now, certainly you would love to have depth. You don't want to get into a situation like you got into this last year where you lose Boogie Fland and then you wonder, hey, you know, how are we going to replace this? Of course, they were able to do it quite effectively, but it hurt their depth. So you would love to have Boogie Fland back, but I have a feeling that with him turning down the draft, and I've heard all these figures that are being thrown out there about what he's worth. I think some of them are probably pretty inflated. But where does he fit? Where does he fit from a roster standpoint? Where does he fit from a financial standpoint? I thought it was really telling, Ethan, that when Anthony Christensen, who works for us, was in Memphis last week to talk to John Calipari, it happened on the same night that Boogie reportedly withdrew from the draft. And John Calipari said, I haven't spoken to him. And I thought at that point it was like, okay, he's gone. Because I just thought that if you are going to withdraw from the draft and you have any inclination to go back to the team that you were at, you're going to talk to your head coach about it. And the fact that Calipari said, I haven't spoken to him about this, that to me said, okay, he's going somewhere else.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't think there's bad blood there. It's just quite a mutual understanding of
business.
There's not, I mean, what does Boogie Fland want to do? Come back to Arkansas and risk having a spot? Like, I mean, I think, of course, somebody like Boogie Fland would see the court, but it's not going to be the role that he probably want because there's so much talent coming in. I mean, the guards that they have coming in that are freshmen, and then you have DJ Wagner back, who he's excels at point guard, I think, a lot more than an off-ball, guard. I think that Boogie's probably making the best decision for himself, and Arkansas's making the best decision for themselves. I mean, it's just, it was unfortunate, the injury that happened that messed up his draft stock. Because if that injury doesn't happen, he's in the NBA draft process right now still. But I think that, you know, that was such a setback that, you know, for him, you need to reevaluate, like, future, and then reevaluate, you know, probably immediate of like where you can get more money. And I mean, with today's landscape of college athletics, you can get quite a bit of money to return to college and improve that draft stock. So I think it was the smartest decision on his part. It definitely was picking up steam, him going to Florida. I mean, it was reported, I think, like 3 days ago that he was going to go on the visit yesterday, and it was supposed to conclude today. So I guess he committed before he even left. But I even heard like middle of last week, somebody told me that it was done. He's mm-hmm. going to Florida. Definitely not some of the, like you said, those inflated numbers that we've heard, but he's going to get paid well to go to
money.
He's going to get paid well to go to Florida.
Yeah. I don't know that it's rookie money in the NBA, but I do think it's significant money.
Yeah.
That he's getting paid to go there.
Which is where you have to weigh out, like, you know, how much less are you going to make from a rookie contract, but how much could you improve your draft stock for the next class? It's just, there's so much that goes into it. That's why there's agents. That's why there's a lot of decision-making that goes on and going through that process. But either way, I don't think there's bad blood there between Arkansas and Boogie Fland, and it shouldn't be treated as such because it's a tough situation.
I'm interested to see, like, if Florida were to come back to Bud Walton next year. We don't have the schedule. We don't know. They came here last year, so we know they're going to go to Gainesville next year, but there is the possibility where they could play a home-and-home. because that rotates on the schedule each year. If they were to come back here, I would be interested to see what kind of reaction he would get.
Well, knowing John Calipari, how he operates, he would tell the fan base, don't boo him.
Yeah, don't boo.
Yeah, he'd tell them before it even happens. So yeah. I just think that – I think anybody who would boo him, I mean, it's just kind of like –
they probably just don't have an understanding of how things work now.
Because I think – I get there's a whole lot of agitation about seeing, you know, especially in football, facing your guy who you feel like could just use your school as like part of the farm process to go get a paycheck. But I think that this is such a totally different situation that I could see if somebody didn't have that understanding or knowledge or just get why he – I mean, if he was going to Florida to get a paycheck, I mean, I don't think that's – I just don't think that's the case. I think it's just a good fit for him to return to college.
Isn't it a bit ironic, though, that Calipari said that he's going to have these small, you know, smaller than normal scholarship rosters so that I'm not preparing you – to let you go play for another team.
Yeah.
And now you got two of the nine from this year's team that are going to be on other Division I teams next year.
Yeah, who's the...
Well, you've got a Visich going to Illinois. Visich.
Yeah. That's how far he slipped my mind. Yeah. And that one's also a bit of a unique situation because I don't know if he was in the plan for next year.
I don't think he was.
So it's crazy how it works. But I think that, end of the day, it's like, I like the train of thought about a smaller roster because I really do think there's a lot of truth to that, to making everybody happy because you're all getting to play. But it was so thin last year that it was to an extreme. I think that, I mean, I would settle on like that 11, 12 around there because, I mean, the depth was seriously a concern last year and whenever they started losing people and you have to prepare as if you're gonna need that. So I think that they probably learned from last year. You just can't have it down to nine. Then again, they were assembling a roster late in the ball game. I mean, they had the portal to work with, but you had to fill your entire roster based on that. So it was going to be a different look in the first place because of just the newness, but also the way they constructed it, I don't think they'll do it again. I think they'll do a happy medium between, you know, there's some people that fill up. I mean, Eric Musselman was king of filling up your entire roster with, you know, there's going to be four guys who really thought they should have played, and there's not room for them. I think that you got to at least get your roster to a point where you have enough options, but without, you know, I don't know. I think there's...
It just felt like they were playing with fire last year.
Yeah.
You sign nine, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, here's reality. Two or three of them get hurt, and more than two or three. I mean, but it felt like two or three were hurt at any given time. And you just got to have more bodies than that.
And I think if I was doing, I personally would go with like an 11 to 12 man, just like the capable guys in on your roster to go in a game. Because I do think once you have it inflated with too many guys that honestly could get playing time, that it creates a lot of friction. And you can't put a price tag on a locker room that just seems like there's some people who are getting off the ship and maybe being a little bit, I don't know what the word is, but, you know, whenever things are rolling for you and you have people who are in the locker room on different, having a different attitude about things, that can bring down a whole locker room. So I think that there's some wisdom in not filling up your roster too much with talent, but definitely get some depth. I mean, you can't have a nine-man rotation and survive.
Arkansas still waiting to see what Adu Thero and Carter Knox are going to do. It would really surprise me if Thero was back here next year. Knox, that one I think is a viable option. He's got until May 28th, so it's coming up here pretty quick.
And I think that Knox right now, it's very close to 50-50, I think, but leaning more on the coming back side. I think that, if you're giving like percentages, probably like 60-40, it's coming back to not. So it's but that's the one that honestly it's keep an eye on because Carter Knox in the NCAA tournament showed what his potential is. I mean, he was big time for him.
I watched him last year, and I just kept thinking, man, imagine another year of strength training with this guy, what he could potentially look like. So, Boogie Flan not in Arkansas's cards next year. We'll see with the others if they end up coming back to Arkansas. And Calipari said at his roadshow events last week that he's not opposed to still getting in the portal and trying to get a player if it fits Arkansas's needs. And I think right now they're probably in a little bit of a holding pattern with Knox. Does he come back? If so, they probably don't get anybody else from the portal. If he doesn't, they probably go looking for talent.
And with how the calendar works, I just sit there and I wonder what's the best people available even left in the portal whenever you get this late in the ball game with kind of waiting out your NBA draft guys.
There's always somebody.
There's always going to be somebody, but is it who you wanted?
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And it's also, I'm sure there's people who are on the other end of, if Carter did decide to stay in the draft, who falls out, who was in the same process as him and now is in the transfer portal. So I think that they would really benefit from getting like a really strong sharpshooter. Just get somebody who can knock down a shot consistently. I think that would maybe round out the roster, even on top of Carter Knox coming back.
Yesterday, Vahiva Aloy was named SEC Baseball Player of the Year. No surprise there. I mean, Bubba and I talked about this yesterday on the show, and you know, he was our choice, both of our choice, to be Player of the Year. And I think if you just look around the SEC all season and you ask yourself who had the most impact on a lineup and in the field, I think you would say Vahiva Aloy, probably hands down. I really tried to think through this, you know, because you are influenced. You try to be objective, but you are influenced by what you see every day. And so I see Vahiva Aloy play almost every day. But I tried to look at this objectively and say, you know, is there anybody else out there in the SEC from a position standpoint? Because remember, you've got pitcher of the year too, so pitchers are taken out of the equation. Is there anybody else out there in the SEC from a position standpoint who is like him, who is as impactful as he is? And I can't think of anybody. I mean, I think there are players who, if, you know, maybe there are players who are playing now who have had years, like a Jace LaViolette last year. That might be an SEC Player of the Year, but he didn't have that year this year. Ethan Petrie didn't have that year this year. Colby Shelton didn't have that year this year. And I just thought it was we don't have the vote, and nothing can be unanimous, by the way, because coaches cannot vote for their own players for these awards. I would love to see though what the vote was. Like was it 15-1 and Dave Van Horn had to go vote for somebody else? Was it 13-3? I have a feeling though it was probably pretty heavy on the Vahiva Aloy side. Again, because I just cannot think of another player in the SEC who, when you take everything into consideration, was as impactful as he was. And then, oh, by the way, he was doing it for the top lineup in the league and probably the best or second best team in the league.
Yeah, and there's some years where you get to these awards. And, I mean, for softball, for instance, it was a lock. You said Brielis is going to win Player of the Year. Pickens is going to win Pitcher of the Year. Some years it's just like that. I sensed in baseball this year that it just wasn't – there was nobody who felt like just a lock for it. But Vahiva was just – you look at it and you say, front runner. You just – it gave the vibes with his stats and especially his defensive play because he is incredible in the field. I just think that you looked at it and you said, this is probably it. I mean, but there was no just shoo-in, I don't think.
It was interesting that he didn't get all defensive shortstop. SEC – All SEC defensive team shortstop. That went to Justin LeBron from Alabama, who's very good. I mean, Justin LeBron, he may be the number one pick in the draft next year. There are Baseball America, they're continually updating their rankings for future years. And as of last check, they've got Justin LeBron as the number one college prospect for 2026. Now, that can change. Ethan Petrie from South Carolina at one point in time was the number one college prospect, and that's not going to be the case this year, so I'm going to be close for him. But LeBron, a really good player. I just, you know, I haven't seen LeBron play every, you know, rep, so to speak, at shortstop. I have seen Vahiva, and I just have a hard time believing there's a better defensive shortstop out there than he is.
Yeah, those all defensive teams are really, they're interesting because they assign one to each position, and at some point you're like, how are you really weighing this? Like, other than true fielding percentage. But, like, I think that there is an aspect of somebody might have a slightly better fielding percentage, but you see the plays that this other guy makes, and you're like, okay, that's the intangibles there at shortstop.
I think sometimes, too, there's a, okay, I voted for this guy for this. I'm going to vote for that guy for that.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I just found it, like, I mean, for instance, like I told you, the softball team has the number one fielding percentage in the nation and is on pace to have a top five all-time SEC fielding percentage, and they had one player named all-defensive team, and it just doesn't – something about that just isn't registering in my brain of how that even works. Mm. Like, how do you have the best collective defense in SEC history, top five, and you only have one player who makes the all defensive team? It's just a really mysterious, that team is mysterious to me, how they vote for that. Like, it is just truly, what did you do to decide that this player's the better second baseman than this second baseman while they had the same fielding percentage.
Dave Van Horn was asked after the last Tennessee game last week about Vahiva Aloy and the season that he's having. This is what he had to say.
I mean, if you just look at his whole body of work, I mean, he plays shortstop. He started every game last year, and he started every game this year. I've only taken him out a couple of times, you know, midweek when I'd go, hey, man, you ready to come out? And he'd always say no. And I'd say, okay, go take a break because I'm going to put so-and-so in. We'd always kid around. And so he plays a primo position. You have to be good to play there. And then he put up these numbers, home runs, the doubles, RBIs, scored 70-some runs. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's an MVP type. It's an MVP type 30 games and season.
And we'll see what happens with Vahiva with the national awards. I don't feel a whole lot of momentum for him for some of these national awards like Golden Spikes, Dick Houser Trophy. I think he could potentially be maybe a finalist for one. I don't think he's going to win them this year. I think there's too much momentum with others like Mason Neville, who was here at Arkansas 2 years ago. It feels like there's a lot of momentum with him. Feels like there's a lot of momentum with Alex Lodis at Florida State. Maybe a pitcher jumps up and gets in the mix too. I thought Liam Doyle was in consideration for it, but I think what happened with him against Arkansas probably going to hurt his candidacy for those types of awards. It still wouldn't surprise me if he won National Pitcher of the Year. He was the SEC Pitcher of the Year yesterday, by the way. I don't see him being – it's hard for pitchers to be Golden Spikes winners.
Yeah.
You got to be really, really good, and you got to hope that it's a down year offensively for some people. I don't see him being in contention for that.
Speaking of awards, Bri Ellis just won Softball America's National Player of the Year.
How about that?
She's their first National Player of the Year.
We need our breaking news music, Sydney.
The big one is going to be USA Softball. That's like the most recognized one. But, I mean, this is one publication named her National Player of the Year. They also had she was a first-team All-American of two by them. And then second-team Robin Heron, second-team All-American Ella McDowell, freshman All-American Peyton Burnham, freshman All-American. So.
So Softball America, that's not the big National Player of the Year award. What is the big National Player of the Year award in softball? What is their equivalent to Golden Spikes?
USA Softball National Player of the Year.
Okay.
Which USA Softball, I mean, it's the governing body for the Olympic team, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's the big one. But
and she's
I mean,
one of the finalists for that, right?
She's one of three. And it's really, I mean, you have her against Jordy Ball, who's a two-way player. It's what happened with the Heisman this year. It's like what she did was like Ashton Jeanty, and she's going up against a Travis Hunter who can pitch and hit. But it's just what she did hitting was so historic that you're like, well.
I voted for Jeanty, by the way.
You did?
I did. I thought it was a better season.
There's going to be one, either Arkansas fans or Nebraska fans are going to be livid about how that vote goes.
Mm.
But, I mean, Bree just won Softball America's National Player of the Year, so she has one under her belt. I mean, she will be a National Player of the Year by at least one publication, if not more.
So, yeah.
Anyway, that was my breaking news update.
There you go. Bri Ellis, National Player of the Year for Softball America. Going back to baseball real quick, wanted to point this out. For Arkansas, all SEC, Vahiva Aloy, obviously, Charles Davalon, an all SEC outfielder first team, Kahio Aloy, all SEC designated hitter and utility man first team. I would love to know how many times two brothers have been first-team All-SEC in the same season. I can't imagine it's happened a whole lot. That's very interesting to me. And then I got to tell you, I was shocked, absolutely shocked that Zach Root was a first-team All-SEC starting pitcher. I didn't think he had an All-SEC season, but I guess maybe the coaches who he did shut down were impressed enough by his outings. I mean, he did have good outings against Missouri, South Carolina. I'm not Missouri, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Texas, LSU. You know, so maybe he impressed enough with those. I just thought it's not so much with Zach; it's just the level of starting pitching was so good this year in the SEC. Like Anthony Ianson, I was thinking about Anthony Ianson potentially as SEC Pitcher of the Year, and he ends up as a second team All SEC pitcher. I was very surprised that Zach Root made the first team All SEC. And then second-team All-SEC for Arkansas, Cam Kozel, as a first baseman. Of course, he's moved to second base now because of injuries. He actually tied with Jared Jones for the All-SEC second team first baseman. So those are the Razorbacks with the All-SEC honors yesterday in baseball. SEC awards, obviously Vahiva, Player of the Year, mentioned Liam Doyle, Pitcher of the Year, Freshman of the Year. This is a no-brainer. Dylan Volantis, the reliever from Texas. There is a Newcomer of the Year award, which is kind of interesting to me because, you know, I think of a Freshman of the Year as being a Newcomer of the Year, but they gave Newcomer of the Year, which I guess is the best new transfer to the league, to Ace Reese, this third baseman at Mississippi State, who transferred in from Houston this year. And then Coach of the Year was Jim Schlossnagel of Texas. We talked about this yesterday. Do you go with Schlossnagel or do you go with somebody else? I said I thought Butch Thompson and what Auburn was predicted to be and what they became was a little bit more impressive to me. But Schlossnagel, certainly first year at Texas, SEC championship, that's nothing to sneeze at.
No, I mean, I think it's similar to why Patty Gasso won Coach of the Year in softball. I mean, it's your first year in the league. I mean, for him, yes, but no. But, like, for the program, yes.
Well, first year with the program, too.
Yeah, I think in that situation, what did you want them to do better to be the Coach of the Year?
I think too many times people default to who won the conference for mm-hmm. Coach of the Year as opposed to really taking a deeper look at the coaching jobs that the different people yeah. did. Like, I ended up voting, you know, I've got an AP vote for the All-SEC awards, and I ended up voting for Bruce Pearl, but it was tough. I mean, I was right there between him and Todd Golden because I thought what Todd, and this is before they won the championship, the national championship, because I thought what Todd Golden did at Florida was really good. I'd have to take myself back 3 months to think of why I went with Bruce Pearl, but it was not because they won the SEC championship. I was trying to look at it. I didn't want it to be just because, hey, he won the SEC championship, he's the Coach of the Year. Because I was thinking about Dennis Gates and what they did at Missouri. Now, Missouri, they kind of fell off right at the end in the regular season, but had that vote been taken 2 weeks earlier, I think I would have really considered him.
Yeah, and if I had a vote in the softball one, I mean, I would have probably voted Patty Gasso because it's your first year in the league. She had a totally new roster and came out on top still, but I mean, South Carolina has a coach who's in her first year. They were picked last in the SEC, and they're number eight overall national seed. So in my opinion, it's like, how do you weigh some of these things? One really overperformed, the other one kind of, it shocks you that they can keep it going, if that makes sense. Like, there's so many different cases you can make for these Coach of the Year across the different sports, and a lot of times it is weighing which do you value more, the championship in the league, or what were expectations and how did your team do in comparison to those expectations? Like baseball, for instance, this year, I mean, I would have had a hard time too because I think you have to give it to Schlossnagel, I guess,
I go back to the schedule they got. Yeah. They got all of their tough teams, with the exception of Arkansas, all of their tough teams they got to play in Austin. It was a very friendly schedule. Bubba and I were talking the other day about SEC championships are not won, they are scheduled. And it felt like this was an SEC championship schedule for Texas. Yeah. Now, they won games. Give them a lot of credit for that. I don't know. Especially in these super conferences where you don't have your two best teams facing off. Well, oh, yeah, you did. You had Arkansas and Texas, and Arkansas wiped the field with them. But you don't have them facing off for a true championship. I don't default to who wins the championship as the coach of the year.
That's what I'm saying. I think there's a lot of years like – it's almost like when you start to make your list of who could be candidates for it, you always put whoever did win it. I think they're in the conversation, but I think there's some years that it's easier to back up voting for the coach who won the league than it is other years. Like, I mean, this year with OU and Texas being new to the league, it's hard to argue with that. But
I think in baseball you could have made a case for Dave Van Horn and Kevin O'Sullivan this year for the way that they manage their teams with all the rosters or all the entries they had on their roster, throughout the season. I think both of them did a great coaching job too.
There's a lot of cases to be made. I guess the easy cop out is voting for the coach.
And it is a cop out. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's a cop out when you do that. Want to mention here too, Maria Jose Marin won the NCAA Women's Golf Championship yesterday in Carlsbad, California. She shot a 3-under 69 Monday and ended up, I believe, with a two-stroke win Yeah, two shots ahead of Florida State's Maribel Ting. And so this is the third individual national champion for Arkansas. You know, years fly by. I was shocked whenever I read that it had been 6 years since Maria Fosse won the championship. It just seems like it
was
the
freshman.
Other day.
I was a freshman. That now I know how long I've been out of college.
What I associate it with, I believe it was the same weekend that she won, that Arkansas was playing a baseball series in College Station. That's what I associate it with, was that baseball series against Texas A&M. Stacey Lewis obviously won an NCAA championship too in 2007. So this is three individual champions for the Razorbacks in the last 17, 18 years. Pretty amazing when you think about that. But Maria Jose Marin, who was just a sophomore, and she's young for her class. I remember reading a story. I think Chip did this in Hogs Illustrated last year. When she came here, she was like 16, 17 years old. And so she's still very young. I mean, this is a golfer who it feels like she's been number one for a good bit of this season, I believe. Feels like there are some really bright days ahead of her, whether it be in college. And you have to wonder, when you have this much success this early, do you finish your college career or when she gets to the LPGA? And it seems like that's probably a no-brainer for her.
I've been around her a little bit. Number one, she is tiny.
Yes.
She is so small. She is one of the sweetest athletes I think I've ever met. She's like so appreciative of our golf coverage.
Hmm.
And she'll thank you for it. And I think that's just really nice. It is funny though that she was so young when she got here. I think she was having to be driven around
mm-hmm.
for pretty much everything. And you know, that's really cool though. It's Arkansas is having a standout year of individual performances. Like, you have players of the year in multiple
sports.
Especially
in the spring.
Yeah, especially in the spring. I mean, they're just, I don't know, they're having a good stretch right now of having some really like exceptional players on the campus.
That's a good point. Native of the country of Colombia. This is what she had to say last night. This was a Zoom that she had with reporters. I think this happened after 10 o'clock our time. Remember, she's playing in California. And this is what she had to say about winning the title.
It feels amazing. It was one of my goals, but it was like one of my long-term goals. I think I was going to achieve this. Maybe my, I don't know, senior year, junior year. But to achieve it in my sophomore year, I think it's a big thing. And being the third Razorback to do it in a while, it's also, it means a lot. I'm just super happy and super proud. I'm kind of wordless right now. I'm still wordless, even though it's been 2 hours since the round finished.
Great quote there from Maria Jose Marin. Arkansas's golf team, by the way, they are in the match play portion now of the NCAA championship. The way this works, top eight teams advance to match play. A team advances every day. So, you know, I think they're matched up against Northwestern today. So if they advance past that, they would be in the semifinals tomorrow, potentially in the final round in a couple of days. And that being played in Carlsbad, California. But Maria Jose Marin, a national champion. She was the SEC. This is one other thing I wanted to point out. She was the SEC Golfer of the Year this year. Every time Arkansas has had an SEC Golfer of the Year, they've won the national championship. Kind of amazing.
Wow. Let's see.
Because that doesn't always – you know how golf goes. I mean, just because you've had a good year doesn't mean that you're immune to a bad weekend. And so I think that it's impressive for her to perform on that stage, even, you know, when she's had a good year like this.
Yeah. It's definitely impressive. I mean, I can't imagine too, just like how much pressure, there's pressure in all sports. In a sport like that, whenever you're like go around and you're, people label you like the number one,
mm-hmm.
the pressure to go out and still like do it. I don't know. I just feel like it's gotta be one of those sports that you hear it, that everybody expects you to win. And then to actually go out and do it is another thing.
I was watching this a little bit yesterday. I was flipping back and forth between her round and the tornado warnings up here in Northwest Arkansas. What impressed me is that, you know, she didn't have a whole lot of birdies, but didn't have a whole lot of, like she limited the bogeys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's something to be said about just being able just to, you know, keep save par. And she did that when she had the lead, and she was able to hang on to it. So congratulations to her. We appreciate you being with us today on our show. I hope that we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. Hope to see you then. Have a great day, everybody.